Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thank you for listening to this Last Blast podcast by The Intercooler. Now, before we get started, I just want to take a moment to thank Footman James for sponsoring Last Blast. As you know, at The Intercooler, we only partner with like-minded organisations, with companies that we think really understand what it means to be a car enthusiast. Footman James fit into that perfectly. I know this because when talking to them before making this recording, they said to me, "Please don't talk about car insurance," which I think says a lot. So instead, I'm just going to give you a couple of reasons why Footman James is different to other car insurance companies. Coffee and chrome, for one thing. That's Footman James' regular car meet. It's free to attend once you're registered, and it's where hundreds, if not 1,000, car enthusiasts get together with their classics to enjoy and share their passion for cars. Footman James also publishes its indicator report. It's a thorough analysis and a detailed report into the state of classic car ownership in this country. The point is to promote and safeguard the future of classic cars in the UK. So there you go, two good reasons why Footman James is different to other car insurance companies. So thank you, Footman James. Go and visit footmanjames.co.uk. Hi, everybody. Thanks for downloading this 15-minute extract from our Last Blast podcast with Sir Chris Hoy. This is a 15-minute sample from the full interview, which is over an hour long. We're making this chunk of the podcast freely available to the main podcast audience. But if you want to listen to the full thing, you're going to have to subscribe to The Intercooler if you aren't already, and head to the Intercooler app or the Intercooler website, the-intercooler.com, where you will find the full thing. I really think that if you're not subscribed already, you're going to want to listen to this podcast in full and to the subsequent Last Blast interviews as well. They're brilliant conversations with some great guests. So enjoy this free sample. If you like it, maybe now is the time to subscribe to The Intercooler. You're listening to the Last Blast podcast by The Intercooler.
So one of the things we're here to do today is to talk about your favourite cars. And we're going to try and get through six of them. So what's the first one?
Favourite cars of all time that I've driven. This is going to be heavily race car.
That's fine.
Weighted, I'm afraid. First one would be the car that I drove, the first LMP2 car that I drove. It was a Greaves Motorsport Gibson LMP2 2015. It was at the end of my first season racing in European Le Mans series. And this was with a view towards driving this car in Le Mans at the 24-hour race the following year. And this car had won the LMP2 category at Le Mans. It had considerable success. And it was about the third or fourth year it'd been running. And Greaves Motorsport, a serious team. And it was we dashed out to Estoril. We got stuck in, there was storms and various things, different airports. Eventually got there for the second half of the day and it was wet. But I'll never forget driving it. And just, even in tricky conditions, how friendly a car it was. and how exciting it went. It was just to me like the, it was the best race car I've ever driven. And also with the prospect of this could be the car that you race the 24 Hours of Le Mans in, it was just a really special day and a special car. It was an open top cockpit one, not one of the closed ones that they have now. So the visibility was great. The balance, everything about it, the setup was just, it was perfect. And that is the best race car that I've experienced so far.
Okay. So let's just wind the clock back a little bit. So I'm guessing when you were a kid, you weren't sitting there like I think most of us thinking, all I want to be in life is a racing driver. Or were you?
Well, I before I really got obsessed with bikes, cars, toy cars, Skeletrics, that was my thing. I had a 24 Hours of Le Mans Skeletric set with the Porsche 911s with the headlights that came on, the gold and the silver ones.
Wow.
And that was the first time I became aware of Le Mans. And that, you know, just, it wasn't even on your radar, the thought that you could even do that. You know, I think other sports seem more accessible.
Yeah.
But I was interested in it and aware of it. And I loved cars, but I never thought motorsport would be even a thing to aspire to. No. It just seemed so far off the radar.
Yeah. So were you always equally into cycling?
Well, I watched the film E.T. and saw a BMX bike when I was 6 or 7, and I'd never seen a BMX before, and it was just a totally different way to use a bike, you know, going over jumps and carving through the bank berms and stuff, and it was just, I want to do that. Yeah. I guess you, as a child, or when you're young, it can just be one sudden thing, one moment, one experience that you just go, that's it, that's what I'm interested in.
And did you know, or did someone tell you pretty early on that you had a special capacity, ability for doing this?
No, absolutely not. I wasn't one of those kids that you would have picked out in the team or in your class or whatever that would have been, he's going to be a champion in the future. Because there were, you know, in every sports team I ever took part in, there was always one person that you thought would play for their country or would, you know, make it to a professional level. And I wasn't one of those people. And it was, but I was good at sport, but I wasn't great. And I think that the key thing that I learned was the correlation between hard work and success. And, you know, even at a young age, I knew that if I wanted to make the team, I had to work hard. I knew if I, you know, I was the kicker for our rugby team, and I used to practice for hours. I would, you know, I would stay after training and I'd kick 100 balls, and I would go into the park when I didn't have to on my own and just practice my kicking. And
so is that something that is kind of like innate to you? Is that just part of the makeup of your character, or is that just something that you recognise you needed to do?
I don't know. I think at the heart of it is enjoyment. You've got to love what you do. You know, you work harder at things that you enjoy. So I knew that working hard at school would get me good grades, and then, you know, you get to university and you get a good job, and this is drummed into you from you know, the age of whatever. But that didn't mean to say I worked hard at school, because I wasn't driven to work hard, because I didn't enjoy, I did enjoy some of the subjects, but I wasn't massively motivated to do that. But when you find something you love, then you will do it until you're absolutely exhausted. You'll kick 1,000 balls, you'll ride on your bike until you're exhausted, you'll go the extra mile. So I think I realised I wasn't one of those kids that would just pick up a ball and score goals or be amazing at rugby. But I was good, but I wasn't, you know, exceptional.
So when did you decide to make cycling your life?
Very late on, because it was never going to be a viable career option. The British Cycling Federation was there were 2 full-time members of staff, and that was it. You know, back in the early 90s, yeah. I rode my first... I represented GB for the first time in 1996 in Manchester at the World Championships. And for that race, you race on your own bike, but they loan you these wheels, race wheels, and you get loaned a tracksuit top for the week. So you sign out this tracksuit, this grubby old second-hand tracksuit.
But you have to get back again at the end.
You have to get back at the end. And you get given 2 race suits for the season. And if you crash and you put a hole in it, then you've got 1. You know, that was just the way it was. So you think, you know, I used to bore the pants off my young teammates back in the day, when you would tell them about the old stories of, you know, what it used to be like when it was very, very amateurish. But I'm glad that I had that experience, because then you appreciate when you do get the support and you do get the equipment and you do get, you know, I remember the first race I turned up and the mechanic had assembled my bike for me, because you travel with your bike in a bike box and you put it together, and you always do that yourself. And then the first race, when someone did it for you, you turned up and it's there and it's got the warm-up gear on it already, and everything, tires are pumped up, and you're like, this is amazing. Yeah. So So you appreciate it. I think if you've, and that's nothing against this modern or the you know the younger generation of riders, because it's all they've ever known. But I appreciated what I had. I did it because I loved it, and then it became a career later on. So I was probably 24 before I thought this is something that I could actually.
And I'm guessing that's quite old for people in that sport.
There's a lot of folk retiring by 24.
Makes me wonder how much more you could have won if you decided.
Well, I think it elongated my career because I didn't burn out at a young age. There wasn't as much pressure. Like the younger riders now have huge pressure to perform immediately, straight out the box. You know, you're 19 years of age. If you're representing GB, you're going to have to perform. Otherwise, someone else will come and take your place. So in the early years, there just wasn't that competition or expectation. All you had to be was the best in the country, and you got the jersey, and you got to compete. I learned from a young age that if you work hard, you'll improve. And I was competitive. I was the kind of kid that had to win at Monopoly with my sister, and whatever it was, I wanted to win. So I was driven. But I think that's just who I am.
And did you, right the way through your career, because I can't even begin to imagine the sacrifices you must have had to make to do all that you did you always love it? Or were there times when you just thought, I just can't be done with this, it's just too much?
You can gloss over the bits, the tough bits, and the bits where you want to quit, and the bits where you're not enjoying it, and the fact that every day you wake up and get out of bed and your body aches. You know, the only time your body doesn't ache is during that last 2 or 3 weeks before the Olympics or the World Championships, where you start to taper down the volume of training and you're resting up.
Yeah.
Because you're always training so hard that your body is kind of suppressed. It's in that fine line between being overtrained and being undertrained. So you only improve if you keep creating a stimulus that the body has to adapt to.
Yeah.
So you have to push all the time. It's not about that one day every 4 years. It's about a wet Wednesday afternoon when nobody's there to cheer you on and watch you.
Yeah.
You get the grind done. You've got to be self-motivated. You don't have to have a coach standing over you, shouting at you, telling you what to do.
Yeah.
That comes from within. That voice is within. But at the core of it, it's because you love it. So you don't love every moment. You don't love the pain you go through in every training session. But I love the feeling at the end of the day, knowing that I'd truly done everything I could that day to improve and to take a step closer to that goal. And some of the most satisfying feelings when you've finished a training session, you're on your way home and you've done a personal best in the gym or for a peak power output in training, something that means nothing really, but to you, you've taken that, you've raised the bar a little bit personally, and nobody saw it, nobody knew about it apart from your coach and your teammates. But it's a really, you have that feeling of optimism, and you think, this could be on, this could be a good season.
And did you always know when you were going to stop?
I stopped in 2013 after London. So London was the big carrot that kept me going. I was 36 in London, which is ancient for a track sprinter. And it was a tough couple of years leading up to London because my body was just breaking down, basically. It wasn't handling the training. The recovery was a real challenge.
But did you still feel that you were able to maintain that level? You were as good as you'd ever been?
One-off efforts, yeah. So I could still see the data, and it was very data-driven.
Yeah.
It's not like I think if you play a team sport, if you play football, you can sort of think, well, do you know what? As long as you can produce a bit of magic 3 or 4 times in the match, then you can carry yourself through it. But there's nowhere to hide, when it's just you and the track and the stopwatch. So I could hit the numbers and I was still at my best, but what I wasn't at my best for was doing repeated efforts, doing race after race, 5 days in a row of racing. And I think that's partly why they only picked me for the Kieran and not the sprint.
Yeah.
So I did one individual event and the team event.
Yeah.
The team event was in the first day, 3 days recovery, and then the final day was the Kieran. So it worked perfectly. But there was the option to try and continue on for 2 more years to 2014 for the Commonwealth Games. We're in Glasgow, and that would have been...
And I seem to remember you talking about that. I mean, you did talk about doing that, didn't you?
I did. Well, it would have been... I mean, it's a bit greedy, but it would have been amazing to have 2 home games to finish your career off. But I realised... I got back into training, and it was just... My heart wasn't in it. My body was just wasn't really up to the challenge. And I thought, do you know what? There's more to life. And it was nice to be able to retire at the point when you choose. So it's always that feeling of one more race, like boxers, one more fight.
Yeah.
And then you look back and you think, oh, it would have been nice to finish with that memory of the greatest moment in your career as your last big race. But it was tough. But your life changes, and you know, I became a father, and you know, you have a whole different perspective when that happens. I'd focused on one thing to the nth degree for so many years. Now was the chance to have a bit of balance in my life and a bit of variety, and motorsport was part of that. So motorsport gave me that. You know, I think a lot of people struggle when they finished being super competitive and they've been at the top of their game. You need to have an outlet for that energy, or I certainly do. And motorsport filled that gap. But it was, yeah, it was a, it is a tough time when you retire, when you've been doing one thing for so long. And also, normally retirement happens when you're getting to your 60s and, you know, you're, and you face your mortality then. I think, you know, when you're getting a bit older and you start realizing you're looking back and looking forward, but we're doing that in your 30s, it's quite a strange feeling. So you try and find new challenges.
Let's get another car in quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, enough bikes.
No, no, we're going to go back. We need to talk about London 2012 just for a minute. But let's just drop another car in before.
Do you know what? The favourite car that I've ever owned, and I still got it, and I can't see myself selling it unless I have to at some stage, a 911 GT3 RS 991, second gen, Visac pack.
Wow.
Magnesium wheels, you know, the full shebang. And it's... it's set up, it's got the Manti.
You've got
it. Yeah, it's got the KW suspension. So I've got that pretty much straight off the back. So it's got this, it's not got the aero package, but it's got the suspension. Yeah. It's got this, the surface transform ceramic discs on it, brake lines. What else have we done? The JCR exhaust on the back. It's, I've done it exactly how I like it, and I use it as a track day car.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's way, way too much for a regular track day car. You don't need that kind of performance. But it's the closest thing that I find. What I love about it is that you could drive to Spa, do a track day and drive home, and it'll do everything to an amazing level. In fact, I drove a GT2 RS, that it was a Porsche GB's own one, to Spa, did the GT2 RS Club Sport race, the first ever GT2 RS Club Sport race a couple of years ago in Spa against all the other GT2 RSs and the 935.
Of course, one.
And that, and drove there and back in this GT2 RS, and it was the most incredible demonstration of what the 911 platform can do.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
And it's such a cliche, and everybody raves about them. And before, and it put me off them for so long. I resisted the urge to drive the modern 911.
Because people have been banging on about them for decades.
And then you get, and you go, it's like the first corner. You kind of go, oh, I get it now. Yeah, fair enough. So that is my dream car,
and you've already got it.
I've already got it. I've done about 11,000 miles.
Okay, you're not precious about the miles. Just getting
I drive it all year round. You know, it was a track day a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Snetterton and Donington here as well. So yeah, it's just, it is my dream car, and it's, I love what it can do, and I love the fact that you can put it along, you know, on the road and take it easy, or you can go do your shopping in it, or you can set a lap time at Spa.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.